it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. Dan Glover Show, 104.1 FM KMOX. Happy Monday to you. Coming up Thursday, October 9th at the Factory, a very special evening with John Hader, John Grice, and Efren Ramirez. Napoleon Dynamite, Uncle Rico, and Pedro from Napoleon Dynamite. Very, very happy to welcome John Grice, Uncle Rico to the show. John, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Thanks, David. How are you?
I am good. So you and I are contemporaries. We're around the same age, and I've grown up with your movies and your television and even outside.
Oh, wait. You mean you're old enough to know better and young enough not to care?
Pretty much. Pretty much. I just turned 61 on Saturday, so I keep saying it's like kindergarten of old age, you know? It's new, but it's different, so. But yeah, I've watched you forever, and Uncle Rico capped it for me, but I've always enjoyed your work.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, you know, it's always an adventure. What are you going to do? You got to keep going.
Yeah, so I've done this for 25 years. I've never been an actor, so I don't know what it's like to be out of work or have gig work or waiting for your next thing to come in. But when Napoleon Dynamite hit your desk or your agent's desk, what was your first initial reaction to it?
Well, the funny story is that I really had left my agent. So I only had a manager at the time. I'd left my agents not because I was unhappy with them or anything. I had actually kind of pivoted in my career and started writing. And then all of a sudden, somebody sends me, you know, this script. And the first thing he says is, these guys are offering this to you. You don't want to do it. That's the first thing he said. And I'm like, why don't I want to do it? He says, because who are these guys? They're nobodies. They're not, you know, this is from Utah. I said, what are you talking about? My bread and butter of my whole life has been independent film. Why would I not look at this script? Thank God I fought him back. I read it. And by the time I was on page 25, I called him. I said, you tell him I'll do that. I'll do the film and I'll drive myself there.
That's awesome. That's so great. John, I have my reaction. And, you know, I consider myself a pretty funny guy. I get humor. I see what you're doing here and there. I may like it. I may not. I hated that movie about a quarter into it, almost finished, almost just stopped it. And then I something clicked and I'm like, oh, I get it. And it's one of my favorite movies. I think so many people had that reaction.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, we joke about it because most people that I know who saw the movie were like, yeah, saw your movie. Didn't really get it. And second time they saw it again, and it's like, yeah, it was pretty good. Nothing great. Third time, best movie ever. And it's like, first off, why would you see the movie three times? Look, I walked out of Twilight, you know, nothing against, you know, just like I remember somebody said, you got to see this film. I walked out of it, and I would never go back.
Didn't go back, yeah.
No way. So, anyway.
John, all of us have an Uncle Rico. All of us have at some point been an Uncle Rico. I played college sports, and every now and then I'll say something like, had the coach put me in, we would have won state.
So, totally.
Was that based on someone from your life?
Me. I mean, I played baseball in junior college, but the fact is that it wasn't necessarily that I felt like I had a future in it as much as I loved playing. And I could see, sit around all these guys every day, and all of them had a dream. They all had a dream. And here we were at junior college playing baseball, and it was like, you know, that dream's a long shot, bro. You know, like, but still, you know, we all have that desire. We all, you know, I guess even as an actor, I mean, I started out as an actor. I mean, who knew what was going to happen? And that was a bumpy road. There's no question. It was a bumpy road, and I had some really great hits, you know, great successes. I mean, Real Genius for me at that time was such a life changer. Speaking of Val Kilmer, I went to his memorial yesterday, and I mean, that movie and my relationship, believe it or not, with Val was like a turning point in my life. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you just carry on, as I say, and keep going. You know, there's no such thing as really arriving. You're getting there. You're always, you know, on the way, you know.
John, has it been a completely pleasant thing? I mean, does it ever get old having people scream out to you like at the grocery store and things like that? Or is it just a gift?
No, I you know, listen, my feeling is it's pretty straightforward. If somebody, you know, going through whatever they might be going through in their life has a moment to go, oh, hey, dude, oh, my gosh, this is so cool. You know, I mean, I just literally got back from filming a movie 2 days ago from England. And, you know, I was sitting next to someone and they were like, hi, excuse me, I don't want to bother you, but I can't believe I'm sitting next to you. And I'm like, well, you know, why? But anyway, the thing is, if you can just by being there lift somebody's spirits, well, I think that's a gift. I mean, it doesn't go to my head. It's, you know, I understand why. I mean, you know, you're in somebody's living room, all of a sudden they feel like they know you, you know, but it's you know, it is what it is, you know.
Guys, we're talking to John Grise. He is Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite, coming up October 9th at the Factory. They're going to show the movie. John Hader's going to be there. Efren Ramirez, Pedro's going to be there. John's going to be there. So for anyone who loves the movie, it's a once-in-a-lifetime great opportunity. John, I also see that you're the part owner of Northwoods League baseball team. Congrats.
Thank you so much. I mean, you know, I went out there and I did like a first pitch in Madison, and man, it was, first off, the team, I mean, I've been to a lot of minor league games, and I've also pitched, you know, done a first pitch in a minor league game, and these players were all so good. This was such a really high caliber talent pool, and when they contacted me and said, hey, we're starting a new team in Richmond, Indiana, I said, I'm in, bro. I am in. And I love the sport. It's really the sport I most pay attention to. I mean, you know, I guess every 4 years, the World Cup is a pretty exciting thing. But yeah, baseball's always kind of been my thing. And as much as Rico was a football guy, I mean, as a kid, I loved football. And I still do, but it's not the same. I just don't have that same relationship. But, I mean, that summer thing, and, you know, it's just, there's something so special about it. When I was on Jimmy Kimmel, some of my friends said, what were you doing walking out with a baseball hat, a Dodgers baseball hat in Japanese? I mean, what was the purpose of that? And I go, well, it was opening day, and I forgot to say it when I walked on.
Yeah.
I was just showing the hat, but I was celebrating opening day in a way.
John, I totally get it. I was talking earlier last summer. I do a lot of my shows, you know, going down memory lane and you know, growing up in the 70s, blah, blah, blah. But I said one of my most magical memories is being on Little League and putting on that fresh uniform, going out on that recently lined field, taking...
And that fresh cut grass,
yes,
that beautiful smell.
Yes. So I started playing baseball again. This summer I started playing in 60 and over. And it is...
Oh, wonderful. Good for you.
It's a different game for sure.
but kind of the same.
But it's the same game. Yeah, it's the same game.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have a lot of time to, I mean, I you know, I've been playing in hardball leagues, you know, every season. This last two seasons because of White Lotus, and then because of, you know, this movie I just did in England, I didn't do it. But the beautiful thing about is if you're playing in the outfield, sometimes you can throw somebody out of first base.
Amen, brother. And if you're in shortstop, you can run it to first. You can tag them.
Just let the ball rip. You know, somebody's going to be thrown out. It's great. So much fun, though.
So I have Kevin and Rach and Andrew here, all co-hosts of my show. Anyone want to talk to John before
we
go?
You know, what's fascinating to me, John, because... You obviously have one of the most quotable characters in the last 30 years. I mean, just like the sheer lines that come out, people like just not people, me and my buddies, just for no reason at all, we'll throw them out there, throw the ball a quarter mile, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah.
But that's one of those movies that has that. It's not just your character, but all of that. I think that's because of you guys individually, not just the script. And I would feel that way about Caddyshack and a lot of the other movies. How did that come together for you guys? Did you guys know, like, as you're going through it, like, oh, yeah, that one's going to get some love, or that one's going to get some run, or did it just kind of come later?
No, I mean, I don't think, you know, I think that, you know, the really great thing about this film is a lot of the actors had less experience but total commitment, and they understood the humor. And mm-hmm. So the thing is, I mean, look, no doubt this was Jared Hess, you know, recent fame for doing Minecraft, which I thought was a great film, and he did a lot of callbacks to Napoleon in Minecraft, which is beautiful. But he was 23 years old, and he had written what I considered to be almost a masterpiece. It was so beautifully written and so 100% succinct in its style. It was there. It was like it was on the page. And he was an amazing shepherd of these performances. He could imitate each character perfectly. And he would sometimes he would say, maybe try it this way or do it this way. You know, he really had a vision for what he was doing. So yes, we were all deeply committed to the characters that we were playing. And the good thing was we did never feel like we were doing a comedy. We felt like we were doing you know, a film that had no pun intended, but it had stakes, and we were playing those. We were really playing those stakes, so that the commitment to whatever it was that was upsetting anybody or making us happy was purely in the narrative of the story. It wasn't like something that we were just deciding to throw in. Luckily, yes, there are an amazing flowering garden of moments that we were all able to find. And, you know, Aaron Rule as Kip and Efren as Pedro and John and Tina Margarino. I mean, and LaFonda. I mean, you could just go through the characters. Yeah. Rex Quando. There were just these amazing, pitch perfect. And as it was going on, we didn't even really think that we didn't laugh while we were filming. I think the only scene that I really remember everybody dropping to their knees and covering their mouths is when I threw the steak and hit Napoleon in the face. Yeah, because I really did throw that steak from off camera, right?
That's the old baseball career right there.
Yeah, that is it. I tried to lead him a couple times with a soft throw. Didn't work. It was just like I was trying to do like a Peyton Manning like screen pass, and I was like, "Oh, this is like the lead guy." And Jared Hess looked, and we shot on film, and it was the end of the week, and usually by the end of the week we're running low on film. We'd have to wait for the delivery on Monday, right?
Oh, man.
So he was like, "Oh, we better just move the camera in and just get right up on his face and hit him with the steak." And I said, "If you do that, you will kill the joke. I can hit him. I just gotta chuck that steak." And John Heder looked at me and he was like, "Go ahead, chuck it." And I was like, "All right." And I turned to the prop guy and I said, "I'm gonna need a bigger piece of meat." And he brought over this hunk of chuck, whatever it was. And I'm telling you, it was weighty, and I was like, "Oh, this is gonna be good.
It feels good. Said, it feels good in my hand."
Oh my gosh, the weight was perfect. And all of a sudden there was this little kid who was kind of behind the scenes, you know, somebody's brother, like 12-year-old kid with a video camera. And I grabbed him and I looked him in the eye and I said, "You watch this." And sure enough, John comes riding in and I chucked that steak and I hit him so hard that I got scared. But everybody, his head literally jolted back and his glasses came off and he cut his nose and he got like dazed, you know, but he stayed in it, which is amazing. He stayed in that moment. And then Efren playing, Pedro, he wasn't really supposed to leave that scene. He just, I think he was about to laugh. So he's like, "Okay, I gotta go." And hobbles out of screen. But it was an amazing moment. But for the most part, whenever we would do something that ultimately ended up being funny, we didn't really realize it until like later that night. We were sitting around the dinner table and somebody would say, "Yeah, back in 82, they just start throwing lines out and people would say like, "Your mom goes to college," you know, like these lines would just come out. And then we realized we were all like the original ultimate fans of this movie. And that's why we're doing this tour, not just because, you know, it's great to get out and go in the world and we play some music and we give away things and we do like reenactments and stuff like that. We really have a good time with it because we love this film. We are the ultimate fans of this movie.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I love it, John. And as you referred to, that you know, you're doing a very special evening with John Heater, John Grise, and Efren Ramirez at the Factory on Thursday, October 9th here in St. Louis. Going to be a really special event. But John, earlier you did bring up The White Lotus. I love that show. It's been so cool to see you have such an important role in that show. What's it been like for you kind of taking this on and seeing The White Lotus turn into the cultural touchstone that it is?
It's quite honestly been amazing. I mean, the truth is, let's all face it, and we should all kind of bow down to Mike White. He's gifted, he's so brilliant, and he is so untouched by Hollywood. I mean, this guy could not put on any airs if he tried. He just is who he is, and he is so pot committed to what he writes. But, you know, I mean, think about it. Season one was written in 2 weeks, you know. That's 6 hours of television written in 2 weeks. HBO didn't know that the show was going to be a hit. They just needed content. That's all they wanted. Mm-hmm. When they started looking at the footage, they started going, wait a minute, this is going to be amazing. And then you think, okay, so what do you have for an encore? Then he writes season two, which is also incredible. And then season three, which just kind of blew me out of the water just when I finally watched it, you know. I'm so fortunate to be working with him. You know, it's nothing for me to take on, with the exception of like having to live in Thailand for 4.5 months. I'm game. I'm in. Don't worry about me. I'm pod committed. I mean, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. I mean, this has been quite an extraordinary experience, and I've met so many amazing people, amazing talented people. It's been, you know, just like a lifelong dream in a way. Yeah.
Well, John, this has been awesome. I've been doing this for 25 years. This is one of my highlights. It's so funny. You're such a good guy. Really appreciate it. Everyone try to get out there to the Factory on October 9th. Thank you again, John. We really appreciate everything.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. And you guys just enjoy the heat that's coming, because it's going to get cold pretty shortly after there.
Thank you, buddy.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.